You are listening to Making Bank, where we uncover the mindset and success strategies of the top 1% so you can amplify your life and your business.
Welcome to Making Bank. I am Josh Felber, where we uncover the success strategies and the secrets of the top 1% so you can amplify your life and your business today. I'm excited for today's guest. He's well known, whether you're on TV, Shark Tank, he's all over TV and the internet. So I want to welcome Kevin Harrington to Making Bank.
Josh, good to see you, man.
Yeah.
How's it going?
It's awesome to actually have you on now, for
Fantastic.
Sure, man.
It's great to be here.
So for that 1% out there that doesn't know who you are or what you do, can you give us a quick overview?
Sure, So I started 1984. I was watching TV, and all of a sudden the screens went dark, and found out that the channel was Discovery, and it was only an 18-hour-a-day network. So I said, I'll fill the other 6 hours with products. So I started putting products on back in the early 80s, kitchen products, then fitness products. So Tony Little Fitness and Jack LaLanne and the Juicer, and then George Foreman and all these kind of, you know, we did the Jenners, and I did Bruce and Kris Jenner when he was Bruce before Caitlyn,
right?
And then we did the Hilton family with Kathy Hilton and then Paris Hilton, and you know, you name it, I've done, you know, this as seen on TV infomercial kind of business.
Sure.
So hundreds of products, $5 billion in sales, give or take. So I'm kind of like a creator of this infomercial space.
Sure.
And now what's happening is there's a little bit of disruption going on there. And actually, you mentioned Shark Tank, so I got a call from Mark Burnett along the way, and I did actually 175 segments on Shark Tank.
Wow, and you were one of the first ones, right?
Yeah, I was in the first go around. There's five segments to a show, so 35 one-hour shows I shot in the beginning of Shark Tank. So
right.
And now they all run reruns on CNBC, plus they run all around the world.
Yeah.
It's running in dozens of countries. So it's been a kind of a good run from being in the infomercial space and Shark Tank, and now I have a chance to see what's going on in the market. And TV viewership is dropping, and so I said there's disruption.
Sure.
And where are they going? Well, they're going to social media, they're going to Facebook. People spend hours a day on Facebook instead of sitting in front of their TV set.
Right.
So I'm having to follow the eyeballs, and as you know, this is the future, digital.
For sure.
So that's what we're doing.
Awesome. And so, I mean, and you've got to see the whole spectrum, you know, being on TV, as well as now with the whole digital marketing and everything else. As you were growing in TV and everything else, what were some of your biggest challenges encountered along the way?
So, I mean, look, when we first started putting products up, we'd have big success, and now it's like, okay, well, success equals financial distress because you need inventory.
Right.
So I'm like, okay, I was selling, you know, Ginsu knives at one point. I'm selling Chinese woks and I'm selling Tony Little Fitness products, and I need 200,000 of them, okay, of each one.
Sure.
So how do I get 1 million pieces of inventory that cost $10 a piece?
Right.
That's $10 million, right? Well, I had to get very creative in raising capital and going to banks and going to venture capitalists, and, you know, because when I started, I didn't have any money,
right?
So, you know, now, every one I could get, I would make a profit. So we actually started just bootstrapping out of profits. You know, we'd sell a few, take the profits, go back, buy more inventory. But eventually, one of the biggest things, I think, the breakthrough for me was learning how to raise capital.
Okay.
And talk to investors.
Sure.
So nowadays, my business model is a little different. You know, I'm still a product guy, but I'm now more of a business guy. Like, I invest in businesses and get equity, and some of these are public companies. So I take capital to put into companies, but I will then help them go raise money. Because at the end of the day, without capital, it's very tough to build any business.
For sure.
You know? And you have to, you know, there's an art to raising capital. And one of the things I talk about is creating the perfect pitch. So there's a pitch to get on Shark Tank and, you know, get somebody to say yes to being your partner. But, you know, that's also kind of involving getting a partner, raising capital. It's the pitch to get investors. And that's a little different than a pitch to sell the product, obviously.
Right.
Right?
For sure.
So I kind of, that first challenge was money related.
Okay.
And then the next part of it was getting the right team. Because in the 80s, this was, there was not a sophisticated world of marketers, digital. I mean, today, you got,
nobody knew what digital marketing
yeah,
was.
So many then. Different, you know, back then it was like, who's going to process my credit cards? Well, my right. local bank was my processor.
Yeah.
They had no idea what they were doing. Even,
right.
You know? So today things are a lot more sophisticated. You got somebody that does everything, and it's in this digital world is just, it's amazing.
And that was one that you mentioned with the credit card processing. So one of the companies I owned for a while, we were one of the first companies to start deploying electronic credit card terminals.
Oh, wow.
And then when I sold that company, it was right around 97. And okay. So I came back to Ohio and started helping a friend of mine who had still his merchant service company, and we were one of the first companies to start setting up online merchant processing.
Okay.
Back when you had to like go in and code the website and like
right.
put all these secure links back and forth and everything else. So it was like way early cutting edge.
Oh, and yeah.
It was like the 80s.
Yeah, and I was doing this in 84, 85, 86.
And it was all yeah. over the phone.
Oh, I mean, look, one day my auditor said, what are we selling for $1,000? And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, this month we issued 20 $1,000 credits. And I'm like, well, that's very strange. We're selling $29 knife sets. Well, the girl in my accounting department was issuing $1,000 credits to her friends and relatives. Because somebody had to like tell the bank, okay, put a credit on this account.
Right.
And because we had no controls, and like we learned the hard way.
Yeah.
That was, by the way, that wasn't the first month she did it either. So it took me 6 months to figure this out.
To catch it?
Yeah,
wow.
we got crucified, you know? Never got it back because she's, you know.
Right.
You know, but we learned the hard way many, many things, right? So, and that was really putting, I said, get your dream team, getting the right kind of controls in finance,
sure. needing
to get the right CFO, okay? Because CFO
right.
can have controls for that. But, you know, we just didn't even know what
think
to
about
do,
it back
right?
then, yeah.
You know? So now we're a little smarter, okay? Or we'd be out of business, you know, I'll say that.
So companies that are growing their business, they may be not at that CFO level.
Right.
So how do they protect themselves? So
okay.
if you were back in that same situation.
Oh, okay. So this is, you know, what I talk in front of crowds, and one of the things I say is that with this, what I call the gig economy,
okay.
the U economy today, I say you don't have to hire and employ the experts.
Right.
You rent them, okay?
Okay?
Okay. Like a buddy of mine owns a company called Total CFO. And
okay.
So you can rent hourly by the week, by
oh,
the
wow.
month on a contract basis, and you can get your books done, your record, do this, that, all your controls in place.
Sure.
And they come in from the outside, and you know, it could be a very, you know, it could be $1,000 a month, 12 grand a year, and you've got a CFO
okay.
that's on, you know, that is designated to
watch,
you know,
your stuff.
Watch your stuff. So, and they have experts in the digital space. So I say to myself, if you can't afford it, you rent it. And actually, if you look at how Snapchat, Evan Spiegel built
yeah.
Snapchat, he decided early on that he didn't want to put all the money into putting all his own software together. He partnered with Amazon on the cloud.
Right.
He partnered with Square on some of the finance stuff. And so he let other companies put money in, and then and I call it renting, you know, the cloud instead of developing your own. And so he was able to focus on business development and the creative stuff, and that's why he's built such a successful $30 billion
yeah.
IPO,
oh, yeah.
right? So
yeah.
pretty amazing guy.
He like went instantly to one of the most wealthiest
but
people.
Some people don't realize he was at $4 billion in market cap in year two with 20 employees.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but to everybody on the outside, it looks like, oh, he went from zero to
yeah, to 30 billion, right?
Yeah.
yeah. I mean, so he did it very smart, but it wasn't by just hiring a bunch of high paid
right.
people,
and
right?
Makes...
So you know, gets some key people in, and I'm sure he gave some little, you know, little option type deals
sure.
away to a few key. I'm sure there's plenty of millionaires running around
yeah.
at Snapchat right now, right? So
for sure,
you know, good thing.
Awesome. And so so being on Shark Tank, you get
yeah.
to see a lot of people pitch their products.
Yes. Too many.
Too many. And what's interesting is, so my wife owns a skincare company.
Right.
And she tried to get on Shark Tank,
yeah.
went through the whole process, and they loved it. And it got all the way down to the final thing. And she thought she was going to get on. All of a sudden, like, the final people said, well, there wasn't enough drama in it,
right.
in the pitch
yeah.
and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So how do people make the best pitch if they want to get on Shark Tank or they want to, and like you said, they're different, raise
okay.
capital.
So, okay, so
there's probably a framework.
Yeah, I mean, look, for Shark Tank, there's a couple tricks.
Okay.
either create drama or, I mean, I'm looking at you and just maybe think of a product, okay? I have a hair growing helmet. It's called I Grow Laser.
I've seen the ads for it. Is that maybe why I'm bald, so I get the ads
now,
on Facebook?
We submitted this, and this I had to be behind the scenes because if a shark knows about it, it's not allowed to get on. But we actually had the what we did is we painted a bunch of hair on O'Leary and made it a whole funny thing,
right?
That, you know, here's a before and here's O'Leary, you know, 1 month after using iGrow, like a joke, right?
Right.
You know, so they loved it, and by the way, you know, you went all the way down and then they told you no. These guys went all the way down, got the yes, come film, and they said no, because they really didn't need the money. And they were also afraid of, you mentioned the word, drama.
Right.
Okay? You know, this was a company that was very substantial, doing tens of millions of dollars in sales already.
Okay.
They were on QVC. They're in international distribution. We had an infomercial.
Sure.
They really didn't need the money. What they wanted, they were like, Kevin, can you get us on Shark Tank? I said, I'll show you how to write the proposal and the video and all that. And it's basically, you need some kind of an attention-getting situation that has some kind of wow factor.
Okay.
And the word drama is good, but or something that's sensational that maybe plays to one of the sharks too.
Gotcha.
Okay, so that's why we knew. I mean, there's another company, and this one went ahead and did do the deal. It's a nightlight for your toilet bowl.
Oh yeah.
It's called Glow Bowl, and another one called Illumabowl. Right.
Yeah,
Two different versions. Right. So what did they do? They put O'Leary's face in the toilet. Okay. And came out and said, "Hey, you can have, you know, O'Leary's face in your toilet if you want." Boom. Right. Instantly got on the show.
Got it. Okay.
So you got to do some crazy.
Create some kind of connection.
See, there. There was one thing I learned in the very beginning of Shark Tank, the first day we started taping, because Mark Burnett came down. We'd been taping for about 3 hours, and nobody had bought much, okay? I had done one deal out of like six or seven, and he came down and said, look, guys, girls, you know, Barbara was the only one that, you got to invest money. This, you know, if we're going to get distribution, you know, and O'Leary says, Mark, with all due respect, would you have put your money into any one of these deals that just came through here? We've seen nothing but junk, okay? So, but Mark said, look, some of these are made for TV.
Right.
And, you know, so let's have some fun with some of this stuff. You got to remember, Shark Tank is owned by Mark Burnett, which is MGM, and ABC, and Sony. They're in the business of getting viewers and entertainment.
Sure.
They don't, in all honesty, really care about the businesses.
Right.
They want more people to be tuning in and watching, okay? Now, yes, they do care. They want to see success. But you'll notice in any one segment with five products, or five pitches, there's going to be two or three of them that are just zany, crazy, that really don't make any sense, right?
Right.
And it's because they actually want to make fun of some people, create some drama, and have some things that are TV worthy, right?
Right.
You know, that make for good sound bites.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Those are the clips that you see on the social media later, like XYZ company and.
Yeah, with some, you know, they love the controversy, you know, or O'Leary and Cuban fighting or something, you know, so the drama again, right?
Cool. And so so you were saying then, you know, whether now somebody was going to go pitch maybe an investor or want to get into a retail store.
Yeah, okay,
you've had so many products in retail.
Right, so look, in retail, you know, one of the key things, if you walk into a Walgreens, and 98% of every product in there you've heard about. It's either a brand or there's some program that's promoting that product.
Sure.
You know, Ivory soap is there for a reason because it's a Procter & Gamble product that's had, you know, tens of millions of dollars of advertising and the soaps, the OxiCleans, the whatever. So getting an unbranded product into retail distribution is not easy.
No.
Okay? Because they want to know, look, we have shelf space, but how is it going to move off the shelf?
Right.
So you have to be able to lay out some kind of a marketing program. It could be social media, by the way. There's a lot of companies that are using social media activity to drive
the
retail sales.
Okay.
So, you know, whether you've got celebrities or whatever, but you can't just walk in and say, I've got a great product, give me your shelf space, because it's very valuable to them. And by the way, getting it in is easy sometimes. I mean, like, yes, you might be able to get it in, but moving it off the shelf and getting paid.
Right.
Because at Walgreens, you get paid per scan. In other words, so I got Shark Tank products onto Walgreens shelves.
Sure.
if they didn't move, I got it all back. Okay?
Right.
And so that's, what good is it to manufacture it, put it on the shelf, get it back, and now all the boxes are banged and torn and this and that. And you throw half the stuff away. So
Right. Getting
the distribution is part of it, but it's then putting the marketing plan behind
sure.
it that's important. So that's on the retail side. Talking about the investor side, I'll give you a great example. I had a company that had I was earmarked to be the guy to spearhead a $20 million cash raise
okay.
for this company. Okay, it was a small public company, and so they instead of going the institutional route with brokers and big institutions, they were afraid of that because institutions, they want to buy today,
right.
and 6 months later, they're going to blow the stock out, okay?
Sure.
So what they wanted to do was to get individual investors in who would buy it and hold it, and for the long run, right? So we went to, they had a lineup of 200 investors
wow.
for me to meet with,
okay.
and with the team from the company. So over a three-week period, we set out to have, out of the 200 investors, I did 97 meetings.
Wow.
Okay? And some were one-on-one, some were groups, some were in the offices of the people, others were at the office of our company in New York. And we did a three-state run, we were in restaurants, we were here, we were there. But every single conversation started with me getting 5 or 10 minutes kind of quietly without the investor
right.
knowing what it is they like to invest in. Ultimately what I was getting to is, what's their sweet spot?
Right.
In other words, tell me one of your best investments you've ever made. Boom. Now, yeah. I bought something for a dollar. I loved it. They had a good management team. They had good IP. They had good long-term this, that, whatever. They're telling me
right.
what it is I need to do to sell them.
For sure.
I'm getting into this investment, okay? So there's an art of getting to that kind of situation. And it's like, you got to get to know the investor, and then I would spit back the presentation that here is a business that has XXX, much along the lines of what you mentioned and you look for in an investment, and then it has a 3 year out where you can, triple, quadruple, whatever your money may be. So, and it's all got to be done within the SEC guidelines, obviously. But the point is that investors have different sweet spots.
Right.
Now,
okay.
Some investors look for experienced management, and that's all. Okay. Others want more of like some real strong IP, intellectual property,
right.
patents. Others want to see an industry that's had some exits of some competitors.
Okay.
Because if a competitor sold out and this is similar, they know, okay, I'm in this for 2 years, someone's going to buy them.
Right.
Okay? So, there's different strategy. I'm involved with a company right now it's in the beverage business that has been slated to be bought out as one of the next big buyouts in beverage.
Awesome.
Because they've hit a certain point. And so we just raised $30 million from some very sophisticated investors that understand that within 18 months, there's going to be a buyout. At least that's the projection,
right?
And it's been written up. It's not what I say. It's what the BevNet News says, okay? So that is buy low, sell high. And from where some of these investors got in, they've already seen, before the buyout, a 400% return
sure.
on their investment, likely to be a 10x when it's all said and done.
That's
so,
awesome.
So talking to an investor is all about making sure you're hitting their sweet spot, as I call it.
Yeah, no, and that's awesome advice, because most people think, you got to show them this, how great my product is and all that. But they don't care about
Sometimes
it.
Sometimes they don't care.
You're right.
O'Leary, he doesn't care. He's like, give me a dollar for every donut you sell. I don't care if the donuts are any good.
Right.
Just keep
paying me the dollar.
Yeah, he does, but at the end of the day, the one thing I hate doing is investing in private companies with no exit strategy. Money is sunk and you're never going to get it back. Okay?
Right.
So, and that's why, my model is also royalty-based. Investing, much like O'Leary does, because then I know if I put up $100,000 and I get a dollar for every donut, after they sell 100,000 donuts, I'm even.
Right.
Now I get an equity kicker.
Sure.
If they ever sell, I stand to make some money, but, cover yourself on the downside.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And that's some great advice. Guys, I hope you're taking notes. Kevin's dropping tons of knowledge bombs today. So one of the questions I want to ask is, so you have so many opportunities that you see and come across. And I was doing an interview the other day and speaking with Greg Reed.
Okay.
And so he's been interviewing a lot of different billionaires. And he said one of the biggest things that sets them apart from the normal guy promoting, he's talking about passion and follow your passion and your dreams. But what the billionaires talk about is, hey, we look for opportunities.
Yes.
And then they leapfrog from that opportunity to the next if it's not working well.
Exactly.
And you seem to come across all these opportunities.
Yes.
And so how do you look for those and really find out, hey, this is, I guess, first of all, how they come across your desk and
right.
pick so, the
I
good
mean,
ones.
Look, the one thing that I say is for many people that are out there watching right now, a lot of people think, well, you know, how does, you know, why does he get all the deals or whatever?
Right.
But so I'm going to be at the Chicago Houseware Show next week on the 18th of March. That's my 29th out of 30 years.
Wow.
1 year I was deathly ill and couldn't make it. But I do 30 trade shows a year. And what do? I network with the press. So I'll see Peter Gianetti, the publisher of Homeworld Magazine, at the Houseware Show. And I'll say, hey, Peter, what's hot? What's going on? What are the buzzes in the industry this year? At the CES show, Consumer Electronics Show in Vegas, there was 200,000 people there,
right.
2,000 of them from the press. I got a press pass, so I get to hang out with some of those guys. But I'm also hitting the new product showcases and all that. So you've got to get out there.
Right.
And I call it exercising the curiosity factor because I was on Shark Tank and that was a great experience. But for 25 years before Shark Tank,
right.
I was still getting a lot of pitches
of deals,
because
yeah.
I was out there hitting all the shows and I'm the guy investing in deals and doing podcasts. I mean, just like we're doing here, writing books, doing podcasts,
sure.
building my brand. And I say there's a very specific reason why I got on Shark Tank. I came out with a book in 2008, How I Turn Ideas into Million-Dollar Products. And I started doing radio shows, and I started doing TV interviews, and I started doing trade press, and all of a sudden, this buzz, this is kind of pre the big influencer
right.
stuff that happens today.
Sure.
This was 2008, but this was more normal kind of press and stuff. But that's what Mark Burnett was looking at when he was looking for a shark.
Right.
So he's like, who's this guy that turns ideas into million-dollar products? Called me up and said, come out and I want to talk to you. So it's, you're not going to do it sitting on the couch.
Right.
Okay? You got to get out, do things, write the books, do the video podcast, do the things that you're doing, Josh.
You sure.
know, like this is fun today. I love doing this. I mean, we're here in San Diego at a great conference and meeting a lot of great people, but the deal flow is coming
right.
from the doers, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And my book, by the way, was called Act Now, How I Turn Ideas into Million-Dollar Products. So I think that's very appropriate. If you want to be the entrepreneur that's going to get deal flow, you have to act now and go do something. Okay,
for sure.
Right?
Yeah, and I think a lot of people don't take that act now, or
right.
the action and
yes,
everything.
Yes, exactly.
And you just recently came out with a new book, right?
Yes. I have, I've got a new book called Put a Shark in Your Tank.
Right.
And that's kind of a cool story that in Japan, the fishermen would go out so far that they had to put the fish in freezers and the fish came back and they're lethargic and not very tasty because they were frozen fish. So they actually put the fish in a tank with a little shark in it that would keep him energized, okay? He'd eat a few along the way.
Right.
And those are the ones that didn't make it, right? But the ones that did came back fresh and, you know,
active,
oxygenated,
yeah.
right? So putting a shark in your tank is kind of like is your business lethargic and slow, and you know, do you need a little kind of energy here and there inside your company? So that's what I do. I come into companies, I join boards, I join advisory boards, real boards, whether it's public, private, whatever. I come in, I energize the tank a little bit, you
sure.
know, and every now and then we eat one of them, you know, because hey, if you're not going to be a survivor, let's move on. I mean, I've had, you know, just I was telling my son earlier this week that one company that I was involved with is probably not going to make it because the people that are involved with the company just didn't have the enough of the gumption to make it
right.
succeed, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not running these companies.
Right.
I can only add a little bit of spin to them.
Right.
And so at the end of the day, if they don't have the basics and the desire, you know, what I bring is not going to take
it's
it to
matter,
the moon,
yeah.
right? So with me, it's can supercharge it, but you got to have that physical belief in the beginning that it's going to go, and then the action to make it happen.
Cool. And so working with a couple of all the different companies you've worked with, what are maybe three success points you could point out? Say, hey guys, this is what you should be doing, 1, 2, and 3.
Okay, 1, 2, 3. Let me think. Okay, so first of all, I'll go back to creating the right team,
okay.
dream team, okay? Because, you know, a good team, you know, not everything, happens according to plan.
Right.
Okay? So people say to me, do you put a business plan together, like a five-year plan? No, because who knows what's happening in year three, four, and five, right?
Right.
Let's get through the first 6 months, right? So I say, first of all, be prepared to make some changes.
Maybe for sure.
It's probably one of the things, right? But with a good team, as maybe a second thing, a good team, they can make adaptations to the market, to the plan, and things turn out a lot different sometimes, you know, along the way,
right?
And sometimes in a positive way, they go down a different path that opens up something. So having that team and being adaptable to the plan, and then I think the other thing is just making sure that you are totally up to speed on all of the newest opportunities in your industry. And
okay.
This is, I call it exercising that curiosity.
Right.
Is, you know, we're here at Traffic and Conversion, right?
Sure.
I'm going to be, you know, this, I mentioned I'm going to the houseware show. I'll be at the hardware show and the beauty show. And I constantly am seeking these new opportunities and new relationships.
Right.
So I think any business owner has to just keep driving and keep exploring and keep learning in your business, because it's those that sit and wait for it to happen that are going to be out of business in 12 months.
Right, it's not going to happen.
Right?
Yeah.
So I think that's probably a couple of good ones there. And make sure you're capitalized properly. So
okay.
get a good investment base from your, either if you don't have your own capital, go raise the money.
Go
properly,
money.
Go do it.
Okay. Because I know a lot of people bootstrap their business and grow it that way. I mean, would you say that's a good way to...
I think it's okay in the beginning.
Okay.
But I've seen bootstrappers take a great idea to a point, and then they get knocked off. Because the big guy saw it and said, what a great idea.
Right.
Now we're going to run with this thing.
And they had the capital to do it.
And they had the capital to do it. So there was a guy that had this blanket with arms called the Slanket. And he was on QVC selling $10,000 a month, okay? And along came a guy that said, I'm going to create the Snuggie and blow it out. And the Slanket was selling $10,000 a month. The Snuggie was ultimately sold 25 million pieces, okay? So gave everybody the great idea, and then boom, all the big money was made, $400 million on a blanket with arms. And so... You know, bootstrapping is good
to a certain
point, and then get somebody to help you take it to the next level.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I think we got a couple minutes left.
Okay, great.
So what would you say your one piece of technology that you can't live without is?
Oh, well, first of all, my cell phone is, you know, I'm still kind of old school. I remember the days when you had the big brick phones.
Okay, right.
So I love my iPhone, you know, because it's a mini computer. If I lose my computer, I can pretty much do everything. Being still in the video side of, you know, as seen on TV and digital, and I'm constantly downloading videos, watching them, sending them, checking, you know, social media. And actually, to be honest with you, you know, I think we're shooting on, you know, some iPhones.
Facebook
and stuff,
Live over
Facebook
here.
Live
yeah,
right
all,
now, right?
Yeah.
So I do that right on my iPhone, and it's an amazing piece of equipment, you know. So I think that's probably something. If you ever leave a restaurant, and you lost your phone, and like for an hour you don't have it, it's like you feel,
what
pretty,
happened? Yeah.
Feel pretty naked, right? So
yeah.
You know,
where
I think
my
that's,
pants go.
Yeah, that's probably one of my go tos. I can't be without.
Cool, awesome. I know one of the points you mentioned was Teams.
Yeah.
And I know, as you were saying, with the disruption in TV and growing and everything else, you guys are really making a big push into the digital side of things.
Yes.
And I know you were telling me a little earlier off camera, is your experience is not in that digital realm.
Yeah.
So how did you really put together, because you guys have Quantum Media
Quantum Media, yeah.
Okay. How did you find that really awesome team of Quantum Media and how you guys utilizing that for disruption?
It was a great situation. So I was sitting in, I live in St. Pete, Florida, Tampa, and a gentleman approached me, Jeremy Adams, and said, hey, your social media, it needs work, and you know, it's like you've been on Shark Tank, and you should be doing a lot better with followers and Facebook and you know, everything, Twitter, etc.
Right.
And so we started working together, and then as he was opening up this world, he had a group that he was involved with out of Orlando, and so
okay.
we ended, and they're very sophisticated young entrepreneurs. doing amazing things on the internet and on online and on Facebook and on social media. And so we ended up saying, let's just form this company together. And I had an original company back in the early 80s called Quantum.
Okay.
And so that I sold and went public, and you know, the rest is history on that one. We went from $1 to $20 a share, grew to $500 million in sales. Awesome. So I said, this is the first time since then that I felt like I've got a chance to grow another $500 million business. And so we called it Quantum Media, and so we're on path right now to jump
awesome.
This. We're looking to do 100 million in the year 2017, and we're an agency, but we're selling our own products also. So kind of do both models, and we're working with some of the biggest companies in the world, some that I can't even mention on this podcast. But one of our clients is a $100 billion company. That's one of the top. One of the largest companies in the world that we do agency work for, generating leads.
Right.
And then on the flip side, we're dealing with dozens of entrepreneurs that have products, and we're selling them through Facebook and social media and Pinterest, et cetera, as well as catalogs and shopping channels and retail stores. So we're kind of the best of the old and the best of the new still.
Sure.
We still do everything we were doing for 30 years, television, retail, catalog, international, home shopping, etc. But we started all with this amazing digital pop.
That's awesome.
That's how we go. Yeah.
And I think that's one of the key things is moving and growing with the technology.
Yes.
A lot of businesses kind of sit and stay in that same spot as they were 30 years ago or 5 years ago even.
Yeah.
And it's totally different now.
From 5 years ago when we were 80% TV, 20% digital, it's now the flip, 80% digital, 20% TV. So it feels good because we have much more control over digital. And there's a gentleman, John Wanamaker, the retail guy, he said 50% of advertising works if I only knew which 50%, okay? Well, you know, in digital, you know, if you're selling, we've got an eyeglass cleaner.
Right.
We're only going after people that bought either prescription glasses or sunglasses. So we're not going after the market.
Right.
There's 250 million of those
glasses
a year. So
yeah.
So we go after the market that's ripe for that product. So that's the beauty of digital, is we can focus on those that really want the product.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's exciting. So real quick, where can people find out about you, Quantum Media, and everything?
Yeah. So. Quantum Media, you know, I'm just going to give you my personal website because that's the easiest place. KevinHarrington.tv, and you can opt in there for for us to get you some information, and I personally get involved in following up with a lot of the folks that come through. So especially if you got a good pitch, okay? So it's great.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
And then you teach people how to pitch and everything too, right?
Yeah,
so
we
they
do.
Can find out all about that. And
today, traffic and conversion, I'll be doing the 10 steps to a perfect pitch, which is pretty
phenomenal.
Cool. And we do one of the programs that we have at Quantum is learning how to pitch, because pitching isn't just about getting on Shark Tank or whatever. It's building your website, getting a customer, writing a video sales letter, raising capital, you know, learn how to pitch an investor. So there's a lot of different things that you need to understand when you're developing a perfect pitch.
Awesome.
All right.
Well, it was an honor to have you on Making Bank, and really excited to spend some time with you today.
Good to be here. Hope a lot of people can make some extra bank here this week.
That's right. Well, with your advice and your insights, that's the plan for them to make happen. So again, thank you for coming on, spending your time today. So
thank you, buddy. Good to be here.
I am Josh Felber. You are watching Making Bank. Get out and be extraordinary.
Thank you for listening to Making Bank. If you have enjoyed this episode, please leave a review, and sharing is caring. Follow Josh Felber on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram for more. You can also listen to Making Bank on Amazon Alexa, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and watch on Apple TV, SuccessThinkers Network, Amazon Fire, and YouTube.